Get access to actionable news and market research with all the information you need to invest smarter and profit faster. Start your free trial today at pro.benzinga.com.
What up?
What's happening?
Cannabis Hour Thursday. Here we are. Woo. Welcome, y'all. Cannabuzz, Bubba Shib. What a great name.
Bubba Shib.
Javier is in the house. Y'all, so if you're watching this today live with us, or you're watching on YouTube after the fact, you might see a voice of God. God might step in every now and then.
How do you see a voice of God? I just want to throw
you're
that
lucky you live in a different city.
That's right.
Javier is around and has audio. If you're listening to this on a podcast later, also you can find us on all your podcasting hosting sites, Apple, Spotify, it won't matter to you. regardless, Patrick, brother, what's up, man?
What is happening? Not sure what's going on with my screen, but all right.
There it is.
No idea what's going on. I'm good. I feel like life is good today. I feel like Thursday, December 2nd, we're already nearing that kind of end of year crunch. I can kind of feel it in the air right now. The market's wild as ever. So I feel like we've got our work cut out for us on this show today, man. How are you?
Dude, I'm good. I mean, market's wild as ever. And cannabis stocks took a hit last month. For one, they've been taking a hit for a while. But you know, it's still a fun industry, and we look at fundamentals, right? Yeah, the technicals are kind of a not yet for me, at least.
Yeah, no kidding. I think too, what's important to me in looking at the market these days, and you know, Benzinga, we're not here to provide investment advice. We're here to take a look at what's going on and tell you what we think. Tell you what we're seeing. What's interesting to me is how a lot of these companies fared during earnings, right? And during a really, really insane crunch in the markets, we've got some companies that have done well.
There are some winners.
Yeah.
Big winners.
Folks that are really pushing ahead right now, which is, I shouldn't be surprised by it, I guess, but I still am.
And it's tier ones and tier twos and tier threes of MSO. Same with the LPs. I mean, you look at November, Tilray was up 1.5%. That story has gone widely uncovered. They actually had a good November compared to everybody else, pretty much didn't. But you look at earnings, like look at a company like that's been around for a while, but just did a combination of Unrivaled. Their M&A spurned them over 600% year over year. How insane is that? And they've been around for a solid bit, so that's a big jump. Tilt Holdings, fantastic earnings, was able to avoid the wholesale pricing issues that happened because of the supply, all the supply issues and the pricing battles. So Tilt Holdings really, I think, has been ahead of the game thanks to Gary Santo. Money Mitch, I don't give investment advice like Money Mitch, but yeah, buy the dip and don't sell the rip, right? Isn't that what they say in cannabis?
I get me. Well, yeah, no. Yeah, we need that. We need them. We need you to stay in. You got to be long in cannabis, right? But we're gonna hear from MAPS today, right? And it's gonna be really interesting. This is one of those companies that is really the backbone of the industry in a lot of ways, right? The infrastructure behind a lot of what these major operators are looking to do. Speaking of major operators, let's shout out a few here, Elliot. I'm looking at the index now. There's some operators fighting back today. You look at CRLBF, that's Cresco. They're back up 2.5% today. Curaleaf, CURLF, they're back up 3.3%. You've got Red, White, and Bloom making an appearance here. RWBYF.
They had to rebound, though. They got, I think, a little undeservedly hit because of just people wanted their earnings sooner, is what it seems like.
Yeah. That happens when you don't report for a little while, right? It's just one of those things. Fair. You know, but GTBIF up another 5.5. Columbia Care, the big winner right now, they're up nearly 7.
They've been huge. Know? Can we just take a second to say Columbia Care right now is doing things nobody else is doing? CCHWF, everybody on the OTC. But they're now, thanks to their listing on the NEO Stock Exchange, who I actually talked to this morning about it, they've had calls from other operators saying, hey, how do we do this? And they're like, well, hey, we're NEO, let's talk. You know, so there's going to be some movement, I bet, you know, to follow in Columbia Care's footsteps. I have no idea who, obviously they're not going to tell me, but I think this is the start of something that will introduce more institutional capital into Columbia Care in the near future.
Interesting. Very interesting. Well, now, so let's talk about one of these other things that's pretty heavy in the news cycle today. This thing out of California about being able to accept credit cards, right? We've long mm-hmm. been told once the infrastructure changes with banking and payments and a lot of that stuff that the institutional capital will start to file in a little bit more. Some will still hang out until it's completely federally legalized, right? But California looking to offer a credit card payment option to some That's of these awesome. Dispensaries, right?
That's
pretty damn cool. I bet again, Chris Beals from Mass will be able to tell us more about that.
Yeah, obviously he's probably got tons of insights on what it takes to be a leader in this industry, let alone legislation. But did you see perhaps Jason Wild's comment on safe banking yesterday on Twitter?
I don't think so.
Super interesting. I'm not going to quote him because I don't have it memorized and I don't have it up. But essentially it was safe banking is not necessary for the larger operators. Safe banking is necessary for the smaller players in the industry, which is a direct counter to the reason Chuck Schumer is not passing safe banking right now, because he doesn't want to help corporate cannabis and the big boys, which is funny because big boys in cannabis are still relatively tiny compared mm-hmm. to big boys in other industries. Sure. But I mean, I thought that was super interesting. And there was a survey, I think, on Twitter that it gave SAFE a 30% chance to be in the NDAA by the end of the year, which mm-hmm. is not a hopeful chance, unfortunately.
Yeah. No, well, but by end of year? By end of
yeah,
year?
So people are, no. Yeah, yeah. They're, that's the discussion right now. Will it be included in the NDAA this year?
Yeah.
So I just don't see it happening. But I thought the comment that Jason Wild made yesterday on Twitter, this is in direct opposition to what we've been hearing from the politicians of this.
Well, and it makes sense. It makes sense, right? These smaller guys need the access to capital, right? Because they're not going to attract the larger money managers and lenders that offer the best rates. They're probably still going to pay in the high teens, mid to high teens for debt, you know, because they don't have the clout that a Curaleaf or a Trulieve or anybody else would bring to that debt discussion, right?
Going back to California, though, what about San Francisco? Cutting taxes?
Yeah, yeah, it's shocking. Right. Shocking. I mean, San Francisco is a really sort of unique municipality, right? They're cutting back taxes on cannabis business cannabis businesses to suppress illegal sales. So they're trying to battle black market by offering these incentives for people to join up.
Well, it's about time. I mean, good Lord. Like, I mean, the taxes on cannabis are just ridiculous, you know, out there. I mean, and then so basically, it's such a huge cost for operators to be in this business that, of course, costs for legal cannabis are going to be higher than black market.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is so refreshing. But the fact that San Francisco did it is why I'm chuckling.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. It does. I mean, I feel like here in Michigan, what we've battled lately is this, and obviously it's going to happen in almost every market, I would imagine. You know, the caregivers that established the medical market here are now being sort of, let's not say pushed out, but let's say minimized, right? In terms of how many plants they can grow, how many people they can care for, which of course affects their overall business models. Obviously makes room for the big corporate cannabis companies to come in and make waves, right? So if that's the case, you would imagine that black market in Michigan is still going to be an issue for a long time mm-hmm. as those caregivers get pushed to the boundary line. Unless maybe something like this were to happen here as well.
Speaking, we got to shout it out, brother. Kentucky introduced by a lawmaker in Kentucky to legalize possession of cannabis, to grow obviously a very limited amount as it stands right now, but to legalize, caregivers.
So, that would be incredible.
Look at Kentucky making moves before a ton of other states. I never thought I'd see the day.
We'll take it.
Yeah, before we get to MAPS, I know we're all excited for that interview. I'm super pumped for the interview. I think there are two stocks internationally, ironically, but investable by you all that we should call out. Intercure, INCR, extends their partnership with Cookies. Cookies, obviously the leading brand in this industry. Doesn't need to be said anymore, but in case you are new to this space, Cookies is started by Burner, And this is the one brand in the cannabis space that everybody agrees this is how you do it. So they have exclusive licenses or exclusive partnerships with companies like Gage in Michigan, companies like TerrAscend in New Jersey, and several others, and InnerCure internationally. And they just expanded to open up dispensaries in early 2022 in the UK and Austria. So InnerCure is, I think we can safely say, the fastest growing international company outside of North America. So that takes away Sundial, takes away Tilray, takes away Flora Growth and all the MSOs and LPs. So outside, you have, obviously the competition is much smaller, but InnerCure is probably the stock to watch.
Yep. I also really love their CEO, Alex, and the fact that he does never appear on camera, ever.
Their management is killer. Yep. And then the other one I wanted to call out is Flora Growth Corp, entering the beverage space with Tonino Lamborghini and extending some brands, man. I mean, honestly, if anybody's been aggressive recently, it's Flora Growth, FLGC. Yeah. They are constantly expanding their portfolio.
Yeah, I know. You got to give a shout out and give credit where credit's due. Those guys have moved and moved very quickly. And so, I don't know. I think there's a lot of companies that are really moving and shaking. That one, I feel like every other week has an announcement of exactly. some real magnitude, right?
Yeah.
So something for a while it was GrowGen, right? GRWG. Every week they were buying another shop in Michigan or Maine or somewhere else, right? But FLGC definitely seems to be moving and shaking these days.
Agreed. Anybody else you want to call out?
Not on my side, man. I think we should move on to Chris. I think we should get Chris on.
Pumped. Let's do this, y'all. MAPS, M-A-P-S on the NASDAQ. We have their head man here with us today, Chris Beals. Weed Maps or WM Holdings. Chris, what do you prefer? Weed Maps or WM Holdings when we're being professional about it?
WM Technology, actually.
WM but Technology.
You can use either.
Just making sure you're WMAPS, on your game.
There's WM Business. Yeah, there's WM Technology. So whichever you prefer, we're all friends here.
Amen, we love man. It, man. Good to have you on, my friend. So, Chris, we like to get a little bit of an introduction. Tell us about your journey to cannabis and then dive into Weed Maps for us.
Yeah. So look, Weed Maps is 14 years old. So we're kind of a granddaddy when it comes to the cannabis industry or sort of technology providers in the cannabis industry. I've been with the company for almost 7 years, have a background in tech and startups and that sort of thing. And through an interesting series of happenstances, I got to meet the co-founders, and we kind of gelled and aligned on this vision, where I really believe that the company could expand on its dominant position as the leading marketplace for cannabis and kind of pair with that and augment what they'd already been doing at the time and folks didn't really understand, which was sort of a portfolio of kind of a platform of SaaS solutions that sat on both sides of the marketplace, either providing inputs into it or taking outputs like customer lists, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And making it easier for retailers and brands to thrive and not just survive when it came to this highly regulated, really complex space. And so when I came aboard, the company was about 65 folks. And right now we're over 700 folks. We're obviously public on NASDAQ. Profitable, continue to be profitable, been profitable all 14 years. I challenge you to find a SaaS and tech company that can say that. So it's
anyone else in cannabis that could say that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, something, it's a source of pride. And when you think about, not to get too far afield, but when you think about, the rising threat of inflation and sort of what the Fed may do, I think that's the time when growth companies like us, you know, typically want to flex and show that they can be profitable. And the good news is we're already there.
Yeah. So what are the comps for those people who may look, let's say, been living under a rock for the last 14 years and don't know what Weed Maps is, who you guys are, what solution you're bringing to the industry, right? Are there other comparisons in other industries where you're like, we are the advertising engine, we are the data engine. What would you say?
So it's hard to put it into one box because there's really two halves to the business and we kind of artificially define them as two halves. But look, on one side, the Weed Maps thing, kind of think of it sort of like an Amazon type marketplace for cannabis. You know, you think about, and within that, you think of it as a virtual shopping mall. You have not just anyone, but high value cannabis consumers, those who shop once a month or more. That's about 12 or 13% of the US population. It's about 94, 95% of our monthly active users. Basically browsing around in this virtual shopping mall, finding products, and then go and shop with retailers, discover brands, and check out. And then we allow those businesses to promote and appear more prominently in the marketplace. And so that's really one half of the business. And then the other half, we have e-commerce embeds, we have CRM and loyalty software, delivery logistics and compliance around delivery, several other kind of piece of portfolio, POS software that sort of complement, and we sell as sort of this business in a box where for $500 a month, a cannabis retailer can basically get up and running, participate in the marketplace, but also run the physical aspects of their business outside of the digital. And so it's tough to come up with one comp because it's frankly a broader and I think more holistic and more cannabis specific strategy than you've seen elsewhere.
We have a comment in the chat from Money Mitch. They are a Yelp and Amazon at once, but obviously there's a B2B aspect there as well, on the other side. So can you talk about, how you differentiate the jurisdictions, the markets that you're in? Obviously you can't sell the same in California like you can in Kentucky, and New York mm-hmm. is coming online. So how do you all, juggle these different markets?
Well, one thing that's interesting, it's even more basic than that, because there are jurisdictions. Pennsylvania is an example. Businesses there can't show pricing on third-party websites. And really the tip of the spear of our engagement with businesses there is actually on the SaaS side. It's on the business solution side versus that marketplace side. But separately, and I think a lot of people don't realize this, both the shopping experience, California specific disclaimers and warnings and age gates. In fact, the city of Santa Cruz has a city specific age gate for people who want to come and shop. But there are different requirements in terms of what you can shop for, but also the product selection, the SKUs you have state by state differ wildly. And so what we're showing you is we integrate and sync with brand catalogs, and we're showing you the information on the product in that state. So if someone gets up and goes from California to Colorado, same brand may be there, but the product's pretty different. And so that's really where kind of good information underpinning the marketplace is important. Beyond that, though, once you place the order, most people don't realize this, but, people say, well, what about when Uber delivers cannabis? It is quite literally impossible for Uber to deliver cannabis. Most states, almost all states require, and Canada, Ontario, when it reopens for delivery, require employees to be the people doing cannabis deliveries, or if they don't, they require it to be often social equity licenses. So the social equity courier type we see in Colorado, Massachusetts, that sort of thing. But then you think about the requirements on top of that. In almost every state, you have to integrate what's in that order with the state track and trace system. You have to GPS track those drivers to the extent law enforcement pulls them over, and you need software. And that's where our software comes in. So it's sort of the above the surface stuff with the consumer experience, but then how does that last mile, how does that order get to the consumer? That's really also where we come in.
Just a quick follow-up question. I'm sure Patrick has plenty as well, but for me, between hemp CBD side and marijuana side, can you tell us about these two different sides of your businesses and, if there is a difference in terms of the revenue that comes in from both, or if you guys even work on the hemp side?
We do lightly touch the hemp and CBD store side. That's obviously a much less regulated side, and what they carry, so for the marketplace to really work, we're doing real-time inventory. We're doing direct crawler integrations with POSs. What's in stock is much more fluid. It changes. The SKUs change much more quickly. The clinical medical effect side is much more important. Is this going to be good for sleep? Is it, on the CBD and hemp side, it tends to be a little more unidimensional. You have much more bulk products, so the inventories are much more static. So while we derive some revenue from that side, it's not a huge area. We typically see it being, a larger market share in places like Texas, the Midwest, parts of the Southeast, where you have a really nascent cannabis market. Same thing, we have some light stuff around Delta 8 where that's state legal, but still very early on the development cycle.
So one quick follow-up, and then I know we have some other questions that I know we want to get into, but when I'm on Weed Maps, right, and I may use it from time to time. So when I'm on here, the thing that I find most unique, right, and I mm-hmm. find that it solves a major problem in this industry, or at least addresses it, that I'd love for you to comment on, right? You get certain advertisements on here for mm-hmm. products, for deals, for dispensaries, right? These companies, I'm sure we all know, cannot advertise through traditional means right now. through social media, through other platforms that, you know, other industries can advertise through. How important was it to you guys to make it possible for these folks to reach new customers, new audiences through your platform? How much of that was a part of the business model, and does that grow, shift, change from here?
So this is a really interesting area. So the thing that's actually interesting is, so a marketplace, the key factor if someone's going to promote or advertise on a marketplace is conversion. In general ad terms, people look at clicks. The funny thing is, and this is something we're trying to educate cannabis businesses on, doing billboard advertisements or doing like kind of flat display ads in the internet is a really terrible spend of money. You're generally going to get a sub 1% conversion rate on any of those because it's very hard to go from here's a picture of a cannabis product to I want to find where to buy it.
How do you quantify that? There's
it's tough. And so you look at something, you know, because people say, well, what happens when Google enters the space? It's actually a bit of a myth. Cannabis dispensaries actually were using Google and they were kind of circumventing some of the rules. And you saw that kind of trail off because they pretty quickly realized that a relatively low ROI. Google AdWords, generally on a cost per click basis for just a generalized audience, that's anyone out there, is about $4, and you get a sub 1% conversion rate. Amazon, you're getting about a 10% conversion rate if you promote and advertise a marketplace. That's what you expect. A marketplace gets better conversion because you already know the person is there to shop. Mm. Now you just need to tell them what to buy. In our case, we're driving about a 20% conversion rate, which is for even a specialty marketplace is an outstanding number. And so the key thing is promoting products and things within a marketplace where you're down segmented to people with purchase intent is huge. And that's really the thing. We're actually have bled in elements, and you may not realize this, but we actually have some data science people who've been doing some really cool stuff with personalization that we're rolling out in limited betas where we can start to better tailor things because it gets even more granular than that. If you are a concentrate shopper, us hitting you with information or news on flower or on a different segment, probably not going to convert. And so things that we can do both in terms of better pathways and discovery, if you're price conscious, how can we do price consciousness with deals that are likely to have affinity for? That's really where we're going. And that's the value. It's just, we're trying to increase education on that. You know, anytime you see a retailer doing billboard advertising, that's not a good use of money, just to put it bluntly. And the same sure. for sort of ads getting thrown up on generalized internet surfaces.
As a media platform that has ads on our website, how dare you, sir?
How dare you? Look, there are exceptions to that rule. There are exceptions to that rule, but it's about your spend and your mix.
That's right.
Because obviously, as some things are more competitive, the price of them goes up. But we're still very early in that kind of competitive cycle when you consider that frankly kind of insane conversion rate.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. You did say my favorite four-letter word, data. data, that is, I know you took that in a different direction, but when I think of an attractive investment opportunity, obviously data makes it more attractive. So you all released a report recently, and I think it was your first data and insights report, I believe called Cannabis in America. Am I mistaken? Cannabis in America.
That's right.
Talk to us about it. What data did you report on in there? What can we find in there that would help us dive in further into this industry?
Yeah. So look, just generally, we have an embarrassment of riches when it comes to data. And that's general industry data, but it's a lot of first party data in terms of what people have affinity for, where trends are going, that sort of thing. And what this report was, you know, we've been expanding our kind of data offerings on the back end for business. And this was kind of putting our flag in the sand of, by the way, of saying, look, more to come. We are going to be increasing the amount of data offerings that we provide. And so this report was really part of that. But for this first report, you know, we wanted it to be usable and addressable for the broadest audience possible, investors, policymakers, you know, individuals. And so in that report, we were really breaking down a lot of demographic trends in terms of what consumers are looking for, how they feel about legalization, purchase, what we're seeing in terms of brands growing, the mix of delivery versus pickup. I think that's one of, you know, if you want me to pull out little snippets, I mean, one of the most interesting ones is we're seeing a rapid shift, as you might expect, as people get more comfortable with cannabis and more comfortable with cannabis in the digital sphere, a heavy affinity, especially among Gen Z consumers, towards delivery, towards online ordering and delivery. you know, and I think that's noteworthy for one reason that most people don't think about, which is, you know, if you are a cannabis consumer, there still can be repercussions for that in terms of it can be used against you in child custody in many places. If you want to own a gun, if you want to do have certain jobs, get government clearances, it matters. And so, you know, that shift in people being more comfortable of, okay, I can shop online, I'm a consumer, I think there's an underlying sort of stigma reduction thing that sits behind that. We did a lot of work looking at social equity and diversity, really high levels of interest by shoppers, by consumers. About 57% of people said they want to see a more open and accessible cannabis industry with more minority business owners and things like that. Something that's been, you know, debated quite a bit. So yeah, I mean, it's over 100-page long report. There's a ton of stuff in there, but I think it's really valuable for people trying to understand like the zeitgeist of what's going on in the cannabis sector.
Where Chris, can we find that? Yeah, is it publicly available?
It is. We published it. It is publicly available. Man, you're really putting me on the spot because I should be able to throw out a link of where.
Don't worry, we'll find it. Yeah. We'll find it. Yeah, put okay. it in the chat. So I'll do that in a second here. But just in the couple minutes that we have left here, I kind of want to rapid fire some things for you. Wins for 2021. You guys did so much this past year. Are there any, you know, couple quick things that you want to highlight? A couple of favorite moments.
Where to start? All right. We took the company public in June. We went out on NASDAQ.
Kind of a big deal.
Big deal. We completed three acquisitions over the last quarter. Companies that we're really excited about have really hungry founder-led teams, complementary tech stacks. One is Camveya, which is a delivery logistics and compliance solution. We had one in-house. This is meaningfully improved, and I would say is probably, if you want to do compliant delivery that reports to the state track and trace system, it's the only package there is. You can Current, which is kind of an integrations and connectors, kind of a Zapier type solution to plug together all this different software, have your workflows communicate to state track and trace systems. And then Sprout, which is CRM loyalty platform, moving really quickly on integration there. You know, obviously the headcount increase being over 700 folks, that's, you know, our biggest center is engineering, product, and design. There are a lot of people building a lot of stuff. New data warehouse behind the scenes, letting us do really cool stuff with insights. You'll see things from that come out next year. But then a guy named Kevin Durant announced a partnership with him where we're, you know, doing a ton of really cool stuff going forward. And I think that really comes from a place that, you know, he actually has a pretty successful investment fund, and they're really interested in looking at the space. So they're interested in the data that we have. So I could go on and on. It's been a really big year, but those are just a few of the highlights, and next year is going to be even bigger.
Nice, man. So I kind of want to finish with two questions. One, before we leave, we have like three people in the chat asking for jobs. So if you if you have a place they can send their resume, that might be helpful.
We have a jobs board on the company website. I would encourage folks who are interested in the space to look. We have really, really high caliber team, folks coming from most of the major tech companies out there. We're very product first, very data oriented. Take a look. There are a ton of job openings there, and we're doing some really cool stuff.
Awesome, man. And then last but not least, I'm going to forego the legislation question because who knows? But as we look to 2022, what can we expect from Weed Maps?
So a bunch in a nutshell. I think we're going to continue to keep our heads up and looking around for more acquisitions and things we can do on the M&A front. I think the acquisitions we did acquire, you're going to see start to be rolled out more fulsomely as part of the integrated suite of solutions. We're doing some stuff around personalization and performance ad bidding, where you'll start to see more subtle personalization and things kind of appearing on the site that are tailored to what you might be interested in. In addition to that, you know, we're investing heavily with boots on the ground on the East Coast. So I think for folks east of the Mississippi, you're going to see a lot more smiling Weed Map spaces. In fact, you've probably seen them already. I was just chatting with a team this morning that was up in the up in Maine. So a lot more presence. And then separately with international, I just testified before the Ontario legislature last week, but, you know, people often forget we're ubiquitous. We're in every international jurisdiction that's legal. And so I think we're really eagerly looking at Mexico, Germany. We've had a longstanding presence in Spain. So, you know, I think we'll see some advancements there. And then I never want to overpredict on state and local governments increasing licenses, expanding. But knock on wood, I think we'll see a, albeit slow, a sort of roll on and beginning of the ramp in New Jersey and Connecticut with actual functioning markets.
Phenomenal.
With enough licenses.
Fantastic. Chris, we got to get a sequel, man. I think there's more
yeah,
to hear.
Yeah, happy. This is great. I can chat shop on this. A shameless plug. I mean, we have probably the kind of OG policy and GR team. So we've done tons of stuff helping to write the bills and laws in a number of state and local governments. So I built Very that cool. team, an area that was awesome. Near and dear to my heart from the early days of me being with the company.
All right, we're definitely getting a sequel then. Yeah, Chris Beals, CEO of Weedmaps, thank you so much for being here, my friend. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it.
Awesome.
Thanks for
having me. We'll talk to you soon. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Chris.
Right. Awesome. Cool. What an interview.
That was awesome. I really enjoyed it.
That was fantastic. I mean,
there's so much rich history there with Maps, obviously before they were public and now where they're going. I know we got to move forward and bring our next guest on, so let's go ahead and do that. This is Danielle Bruno, CEO of Perfect Union.
I'm excited for this. Hi, Danielle.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Oh, we're so good. We're so good. I mean, how could we not? We get to get on here and shoot the gab with a bunch of really cool people. So, you know.
Yeah, it's not a bad business to be in. I've only been in it for a month, but so far it seems pretty fun. And it was nice to see Chris on. I actually know, well, I've met Chris a few times. We're both part of the same leadership summit called Patau. So I've spent some time hanging out with him. He's a cool guy. It was a great interview.
Well, you're obviously cool yourself. Tell us, where were you a month ago? Like, where'd you come from? How'd you get into cannabis?
I was, prior to this, I was CEO of a restaurant chain called Tender Greens, which is based out of Southern California.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I've spent my whole career in various consumer businesses. I've been in the personal care industry. I ran Pete's retail stores for many years, Pete's Coffee and Tea. Yeah.
Wow,
and
okay.
I guess my biggest claim to fame so far, is the I opened the first Apple store.
No way. Where?
Yep. Way. The first Apple store opened in Glendale, 2000, in Glendale. So 20 wow. years ago.
Talk about some retail experience that nobody else has. That's fantastic. So let's dive in a little bit to Perfect Union and to be respectful of your time here. I know we don't have a lot of it. So Perfect Union is something that I've really admired from afar, quite literally. I'm in New York. Mm-hmm. But you know, the model of giving back, but I won't take your thunder. Could you tell us about your business?
Yeah. And I should say, I can't take credit for developing the business. I can't really take credit for building any of the businesses that I've had sort of the great honor to work in. My sort of stage is I come in when a business is ready to scale and make it bigger after the founder's already done all the hard work of creating the business. So the business was created, depends on how you look at what the start of the business is, but it was, the founder is David Spradlin, and he's very much a cannabis OG, was, you know, peddling goods, you know, behind closed doors when people were still carrying shotguns and so on. And he really wanted to create a, it was, I guess, at one of the locations he went to in Oakland, and it was down some rickety stairs, and he was trying to sell his product to the dispensary at the time. And an older woman came in and she could barely walk, and she sort of made her way down the stairs and sort of cozied up to the bar and said she needed some product because of her pain. And I think she was suffering from cancer. And he watched this and he just thought, God, you know, it can't be like this. There's so many people who need access to this product who are going to be incredibly intimidated by some of the places they needed to go to get it. So he created the first location in Sacramento. And our locations are, you know, they're not intimidating. They're not too cool. They're great locations with great teams, a lot of high quality product, and cleanly merchandised in a very friendly atmosphere. And that's sort of the way he started the business. Today we have 14 locations in California, a handful in New Mexico, and we're really the largest cannabis retailer in California. So, and hopefully soon to be in the next 5 years, maybe one of the largest in the world.
So Danielle, go a bit further. Largest in terms of number of locations or
number square
footage?
So we're the largest number of wholly owned cannabis retailers. So there's a handful of others I won't mention.
the Voldemorts. Got it.
Yeah. There's a handful that are, I hear, okay. But most of those are license relationships, so they don't actually own the businesses.
Got it. Okay. So cool. It sounds like there's a lot of expertise that you're bringing into this space. A month in, where do you go? And I want to go back to the business in a second, because I just want to hear more about Perfect Union and what's going on. But you specifically, diving in with the experience you have, what do you tackle first? What do you dive in? You say, all right, I'm going to plant my flag in this trench, you know?
Yeah. So at this stage, what I'm doing isn't that different than what I've done in other companies when I've joined, because it's this time where the company sort of kind of had explosive growth and there wasn't a lot of seasoned leadership to scale the business. And so things are kind of all over the place. And so what I'm doing here and what I've done at the other companies is sort of like get things squared away, hire an amazing team, get the right structure, look at the strategy of the company, look at the resources necessary to hit that strategy, and then start setting things up. So it's really about building a foundation, putting things in the right place to get us ready for that next stage. And so in that way, it's not that different. The reason I personally sought out cannabis, actually, and met with several companies before this relationship with Perfect Union came along. The reason that it was such a great fit for me is it's a well-run business with a great reputation. There's a lot of businesses across California and across the country that aren't operating like upstanding businesses. And there's obviously, you know, the black market, which we're all hoping will get resolved eventually when prohibition's over. But there's also just businesses that either aren't treating their employees well, maybe they're not paying all the, you know, the taxes that they're supposed to, or paying the vendors and so on. So there's a lot of stuff that happens in this business, which probably happens in every nascent business that's trying to, you know, get its feet under it. So for me, it was about joining a company that had a really good, you know, brand reputation and values. And the reason for cannabis in general is just because I saw so much opportunity to professionalize a business that's really been run by a lot of brilliant people and street hustlers and people who are used to breaking rules, which I love and I'm a big fan of. But in order to scale and really grow it, I think we need to start creating some of these businesses in a way that actually set them up for future success, which means professionalizing them.
Absolutely. So, you know, you talk about your past in retail and understanding brands, and, you know, you've been in hospitality, you've been in, you know, Apple. How far away is cannabis from, you know, being on the same level of quality brands? You know, how far away are we for this industry to being able to achieve national known brands? We'll start with that, but internationally known brands.
Yeah, I think I'd divide that up into two categories. One is the industry itself, and one is the other is the product. So as far as the industry goes, you know, things have moved pretty slowly when you think about the medical legalization and eventually the recreational legalization in, you know, most states. But I think you guys said you're in New York. You guys, you know, like you don't even have recreational use yet. And it's a very, very progressive city. So I think in terms of the movement, it's been pretty slow to date. But I think it's going to move very, very quickly going forward. There's sort of this critical mass that's happening. I think people on both sides of the fence are seeing the benefits of cannabis. I think they're seeing the benefits to the taxation of cannabis for the cities. And I think they're seeing the risk to not having a legal business. And I'm sure we've all heard about the crime sprees going on in a cash only business. It can be very, very dangerous. So I think there's a lot of momentum and forces on all sides to legalize it and move it forward. And so I think probably the last 10 years of cannabis have been very slow. I think in 10 years, this business will not be recognizable. It'll be a totally different industry. So from an industry standpoint, I don't think it's that far from other industries. When I opened the first Apple retail store, the only place you could buy an Apple computer was at Best Buy or CompUSA. And it was in a box stacked with other products and, you know, a big, big box sort of grocery aisle sort of atmosphere. The idea of boutiquing technology and putting it on, you know, these beautiful fixtures without wires and letting people use them and creating the space, that was unheard of. And for people who are probably under 30, that may be hard to believe, but there's a lot of businesses that came to play after Apple that created their businesses in the image of the Apple design that, that weren't there before. The AT&T stores, the Microsoft stores, you know, almost any technology store now. So I think Apple sort of, within a few years, changed the industry altogether and changed the way people felt about computers. I think that's about to happen in the cannabis industry. Absolutely. I think we're that close. In terms of the product, that's a little trickier because you have to differentiate the product in a way that's a little harder than with a computer.
So let's dive into that for our last couple minutes that we've got, because you're in California. You're in the, you know, sort of the beast's lair, right? When it comes to compression right now, right? Yep. This pricing issue in California with the way prices have just absolutely fallen through the floor. Mm-hmm. How do we solve that? It's got to be solved, right? It's killing everyone. What's your take on it, and how are you tackling that right away? A month in, how are you tackling that?
Well, you know, I think the market always corrects itself. There's definitely an abundance of supply right now because everybody went wild, and I get that. And the thing is, the product does have a life on it, so you know it won't be in around forever, but it'll correct itself. Just even our industry alone, we've sort of recontemplated, do we want to invest more in grows, or do we want to potentially start looking at other people's products, because there's so much out there and we don't necessarily need to be contributing to more grows. Not sure that that's where we're going to land, but it's something that we're definitely looking at. I think at the end of the day, the companies that are going to survive are the ones that know how to scale. Running any business in California is incredibly hard. When we launched the retail stores at Apple, there was a famous image of Steve Jobs standing on the Macworld stage with the expression behind him that says, retail is hard. And the reason he said retail is hard is because everyone takes the idea of retail for granted. And people think you just can pop open a store and sell products and you're going to make money. But it's incredibly difficult to actually make money in any business in California. And this business with the additional taxing makes it even harder. So I think some won't last through this. I think some are just going to be pushed out because the pricing is just going to make it impossible to stay competitive. Then the product is going to make its way through the system. The market will correct. And there will be a handful of companies still standing because they know how to actually run a business.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's as good an answer as I could have hoped for. I think that it's one of those things where you see a lot of people trying to cash in on a mm-hmm. business right now, let's say it this way, cash in on an industry without a real business plan, right? Undercut the next guy, it seems, right? Anything else, Danielle, that you want our audience to know about you, about Perfect Union? I know we're short on time.
Yeah, I mean, I would say I was a little nervous coming on because I was like, how am I going to talk to these, you know, cannabis expert guys or just join the business? Though, you know, I may or may not have been involved in this business in one way or another for many, many years. but in terms of actually running the business, this is fairly new for me. So it's exciting to talk about sort of the way I see things now, but I would love to reconnect in 6 months because I think the world's going to change pretty dramatically even in that short time. And I think it'll be exciting to see what kinds of topics make sense then and how much the world has changed.
Let's mark it down. Let's look at 2022 and see where Perfect Union is in 6 months under your awesome leadership, Danielle. Thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate
Thank you.
It.
Thanks
we
for
really
having
appreciate
me on,
it.
Guys. Take care.
Right. Bye-bye. Have a good one.
Take care.
Okay. I've never been called an expert in cannabis before. Probably the last time too.
That's it. You get one.
That's Everybody it. Gets one.
Speaking of expert, right? I think if you guys haven't checked out Elliot's show at 9 a.m. every day, you're missing out, right? I shouldn't say every day. It's weekdays at 9 a.m.
10 a.m., but yes.
10 a.m., whatever. It's in the morning. Just check it out. Cannabis Daily, I'm not up that early, so whatever. It's fine.
It's true. It's like 5 minutes of your day. And honestly, like, it would help me to get your all's opinion on it, to let me know what you need. But we talk about stocks, y'all. We talk about it early in the morning. We talk about who's winning. And, you know, I give you a few picks of my own that I think are awesome. Obviously, you know, when it comes to what we offer here, it's not investment advice. It literally is just our interpretation of the markets at hand. Yep. So, you know, when I look at ancillary stocks, we're talking about weed maps, you know, we're talking about hydroponics companies, even REITs. REITs have been leading the way. You know, Empower REIT is actually the leading ancillary stock right now, which I find incredibly interesting. Even IIPR was at a loss in November. And they, I mean, do they ever stop
no.
with deals?
No. They're almost an institution these days. I mean, they're yeah. massive.
So, I mean, Power REIT is doing well. And on the opposite side of that, you have MAPS. And you know, I think MAPS is a business that's doing well. But, you know, a lot of these ancillary plays are going to go as the industry goes. So, and a lot of it is just, you know, moves on these political tweets that are just so unnecessary half the time.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So one of these things that I always think about, right. And I know, listen, there's everybody who's an owner, operator, executive at one of these cannabis companies hates this question, but I always like to look at it as an investor, because I want to know what I'm potentially signing up for. Right. If I'm looking at Kern, or Akerna, K-E-R-N, mm-hmm. I want to know if everything goes legal, who's going to buy them out, right? Is it going to be Oracle? Is it going to be Sage? Is it going to be Microsoft Dynamics, Akerna. Right? I do too. No, I do too.
Huge fan of Akerna.
Right? But I start to look at, all right, where's the exit, you know? And mm-hmm. then for a company like MAPS, it's really interesting. Mitch was in there, Bubba Shib, or whoever else it was, who gave us the, you know, their DoorDash, their Spotify, their all these companies combined, right? It's going to be a little harder to take MAPS out at the end of this, mm-hmm. right? Maybe it's an Amazon that kind of does everything that would need to be the one to roll them up, if that is indeed the case, right? Some of that's going to happen in this industry, right? So if you're an investor, you need to be looking for that specifically, right? Who's right. going to come in? Who's going to take out, you know, Aurora and make them a Pepsi product? Right. Or Hexo going straight into Molson Coors or mm-hmm. Canopy being Constellation.
Or Organigram right? into BTI.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is going to happen.
Yeah. It's going to happen. And, I mean, but also speaking of weed maps, I mean, I think you're going to get a lot of sentiment. You're going to be able to tell a lot of market sentiment based on the IPO of Leafly and the merger of Leafly. I think, you know, those two companies are about as similar as they get when it comes to what they do. They're not mirror images by any means.
Right.
But you know,
Leafly is the one doing a de-spac, right? They'll yeah. be de-spacking soon. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. They're merging with, or they're doing a merger with Merida.
Got it.
Capital. So that'll happen, I think, by the end of the year, is the timeline we're expecting there. And I think that's going to be a good measure of sentiment for weed maps. Anyways, guys, if you have any stocks you want us to talk about, let us know. Patrick, anything you want to cover outside of what we've spoken about already, my friend?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Benzinga is going through a really, really fun, crazy time right now, right? We're planning for next year. We've got some sessions coming up that will determine the sort of overarching trajectory of what 2022 and beyond is going to look like, right? For those of you who've been living under a rock, we were acquired about a month ago by Behringer Capital, a private equity fund out of Toronto. What that means is that it's business as usual as we move and ratchet this thing up to see what happens 4 or 5 years from now. I won't speculate as to what that is. I think you probably can for me. But here's the thing. 2022 is going to be big. We want you to be there with us. There's a couple things I want to make you aware of on the event side, at least. There'll be two big cannabis capital conferences, right? So check out benzinga.com/events. Thank you, producer AT. One in April in Miami, one in September in California. We've never done one on the West Coast. We're really excited to bring it out that way, right? These are going to be massive, right? Much, much larger in size than anything we've done to date, right? Yeah. So really, really excited about what that's going to look like. We have other things coming up too. We've got a live and in-person trading summit. We haven't done one of these in a couple of years.
Pumped.
Right? We're going to do that. It's going to be in Vegas in June. We are not messing around. Come on. We're not messing around. You guys got to be there. We want you all there. It's going to be sick. We're going to have live trading. We're going to have mentors. We're going to have our people there. Well, I don't know. We'll dress Jason Raznick up in your favorite costume. Put something in the chat. Let me know. We'll make that happen for you. But yeah, I think next year is going to be a really, really cool year across the board. Content, events, everything that we're doing on Benzinga.com, the look and feel that might shift and change a little bit for you guys. The community aspect that we're building into how you interact with certain pieces of content. It's going to be really, really exciting. So yeah, Stay tuned in here. Go to .com, keep interacting there. Tell us what you're interested in. Obviously, you're going to see a lot of fun stuff coming.
Eagle, you got the right idea. Really quickly, because I asked, CBDD, I think, is a massive growth opportunity waiting to happen. And I think CBDD could compete with INCR. I don't know necessarily if they're going to beat INCR, but they can compete.
Really? That is a bold statement.
It is. It is.
A bold statement.
They are in markets that really the markets, it doesn't matter that they're in right now, but those markets are starting to come online.
Yeah.
And their footprint is set. And they have a great footprint and their volume is high. They have a big shareholder base. I think they're going to be.
Marcel is smart.
Yeah.
Marcel's
they're
really
going to be well capitalized and they're going to be ready to take over Northern Europe to start and maybe expand to Germany, maybe hit Portugal and Spain. I mean, CBDD, I think, could be one of the major players in Europe when that gets going, which is twice as big as the US overall. Obviously, you'll have different markets that require different things. UK is afraid of anything that has to do with recreational, so it'll be a bit. But MMNFF. Patrick, did you hear about that lawsuit?
I did hear about the lawsuit.
Yeah,
yes.
Former CFO. Feel for the guy, yes. But like, I mean, you read that and you're kind of like, I mean, how was he expecting to get any money out of them? So they don't owe him $24 million. Yeah. So that's great.
Sorry, dude.
Yeah. But that being said, y'all, MMNFF, I think, has been a steady climb back from the
basement. I agree.
They have been doing their work. New management, getting assets, divesting assets that they can't, be efficient
support.
With,
yeah.
Support. And I think they're running a more efficient business now. CBDD, I think, is a wait and see play. You're not going to get any money from them tomorrow if you invest today, but I think they're a very interesting play to put on your watch list. That's it. I'm off my soapbox.
No, I think that's good. I think what you said about MedMen is accurate, right? I think what they're doing to climb back, it seems thoughtful to me, right? And not in the cute, endearing way, but thoughtful in the strategic way, right? These guys have been very smart. They hooked up with Irwin and the team out of Tilray. They've got some interesting things going on there. They've got a little bit of funding. They're trying to make the balance sheet work. And I think the what happened with the lawsuit is going to help them. Right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, Richard knows that. So there we go.
There you go.
Awesome. Awesome, y'all. That's it for me, y'all. Patrick, I'm telling you, that's it for you too. Sorry.
That's it. Listen, I have nothing else, but what I will say is this: check out Cannabis Daily, like, and subscribe to this page. Go do yourself a favor and read Javier and his team's content, benzinga.com/cannabis. If you're not on there every day, you are missing out.
Yeah.
You're missing out.
Love it. Awesome. Guys, check out Cannabis Daily, benzinga.com/podcasts every morning at 10 a.m. CBDS, you're asking a lot about a glitch C really quick. I don't know much about it, but looking at their stock, it doesn't really excite me. But how about this? You listen to Cannabis Daily in the morning. I will let you know my actual thoughts about it.
There you go.
Yeah. So Glitch C, hit me up, Cannabis Daily in the morning at 10 a.m. on benzinga.com/podcasts. I will talk about CBDS for you. Patrick.
That's it, guys.
Always good.
I hope you have a wonderful night. Thanks for bringing me on, Elliot. And we'll see you next time. Great show today.
Did you know nearly all stock price changes of 10% or more result from a single news headline? That's right. News headlines have a unique ability to drive stock prices up or down. These news catalysts create trading opportunities every day. All you need is a little help to reach out and take them. And if you're looking to grow your portfolio, it doesn't matter if your investment budget is small or big. An easy-to-read stream of news headlines will increase your opportunities to profit from price changes in the stock market, consolidate a knowledge-based investment strategy, and grow your portfolio. All you need is Benzinga Pro and its powerful news alerts, price tracking, and portfolio monitoring to make a positive change in your trading performance. We've already helped thousands of retail traders across the world, and they could not be happier. Increase your market knowledge, boost your exposure to big movers, and make informed trades before major price changes. The opportunities are all around you. Subscribe now, and we'll skyrocket your portfolio today.